ISIS is on the brink of defeat in Syria as US-backed fighters close in on the group's last remaining stronghold. Syrian forces have reportedly cornered ISIS fighters in the village of Baghouz in eastern Syria. Thousands of civilians are still fleeing the town, ISIS women and children amongst them. The capture of the last pocket of the town, still held by ISIS, will mark the end of a four-year-long campaign to end the group's hold on territory in Syria and in Iraq. Martin Chuloff is The Guardian's Middle East correspondent. He's just returned from eastern Syria. He's now in Beirut. Martin, thanks very much for joining us again on Breakfast.
Good morning to you, Fran.
Now, Mustafa Bali from the Syrian Democratic Forces says he expects this fight to be over soon. Mind you, I think we did an interview 3 weeks ago reporting the same thing, this last group of ISIS fighters proving harder than was expected to defeat.
Well, they certainly are. And one of the main reasons for that is they had so many civilians with them living under the ground in this last pocket of Baghouz, this ruined town on the Euphrates River Valley. 10 days ago, we thought there were 500 to 700 people in this town, and most of them fighters. We'd seen many thousands of women and children leave in the days earlier. But after that, thousands more appeared from under the ground, upwards of 9,000 people. We do think that that's as many civilians or people, women and children affiliated to ISIS as there were there, and those who have stayed don't want to leave.
So there are still tens of thousands of people in villages and farmlands nearby. Is that the situation? Have they been able to escape yet, all of them?
Now, the people in Baghouz seem to have been a collective who had gathered from towns and villages all around the region as what remained of ISIS collapsed. They were dug into a tunnel network, and from what we can gather, all of those who want to leave have left now, and that was upwards of 9,000 in the past 10 days and another 10,000 just prior to that. However, under the ground, along with these diehard fighters, the vanguard of the organisation, there may well be dozens, if not hundreds, more women and children who don't want to leave or can't leave.
Yeah, and I'm just a bit unclear, Martin. Are those 9,000 civilians, are they women and children who were linked with ISIS? Are they ISIS wives and ISIS children, or are they any civilians?
Yeah, they're mostly ISIS wives and children. There are some that aren't, some that were fellow travellers or couldn't leave. But it must be said that certainly in the time that I was there, that the women that were leaving did seem to be committed to the cause.
This influx of people coming out of, or outflow really, people out of Baghouz, as you say, does it raise a question about the sort of quality of the intelligence generally? Because not only, as you say, at least 10 days ago, if not more, there were reports that they're about to be defeated, and there are reports of hundreds of people, civilians. Now we've seen 9,000 emerge. Something's gone very wrong, hasn't it?
I think it has, actually. We were there a couple of days, and we saw the trucks come across the horizon and towards us and disgorge hundreds of women and some fighters. And some of the men did say that there are many thousands more there. Mm-hmm. And the Kurds were saying, well, there can't be because it's such a small area. And when you look at this area from the front lines, you can understand the confusion. How could 9,000 people live under the ground there? They must have an extraordinary, elaborate tunnel network.
So you've recently visited the Al-Hol refugee camp, which is dealing with this huge influx of civilians, including a huge influx of ISIS families, women and children. How would you describe the situation in the camp?
Semi-controlled chaos, I would say. There are 40,000 people in Al-Hol. There are most of them have been there throughout the duration of the war. They've arrived from different conflicts around Syria. But the recent arrivals are upwards of 13,000, and they have come from Baghouz and villages nearby as what remains of the so-called caliphate has collapsed. Now, they've been separated into three areas. There's a Russian area, Tunisian area, and the rest of the Europeans. The Russians and the Tunisians seem to be hardcore, and they've been burning tents of others who they don't believe are devout enough. And the security situation inside the camp is barely controlled. That said, there is food, there is shelter, and there are blankets, and they have gotten through a reasonably wet and cold late winter.
So just to go back to what you said, I've heard these reports too. This is ISIS, the way I heard it, ISIS women burning the tents of non-ISIS women, and also reports of ISIS women attacking women who are taking off the niqab. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, we have heard that, and It has been reported to us by people that we've established contact with and indeed met in the camp that there are hardcore ISIS women among them who are trying to set Islamic tenets within the camp itself and are being very violent towards women who dare to take off their niqab or towards women they don't think are devout enough. And there was indeed a large fire that appeared to have been set by one of these fanatics about 5 days ago, which burnt 15 tents. And I think it did actually cause some injuries to some women.
Gee. Of course, there are foreigners amongst these women and children because many, many women went to be ISIS brides from all around the world, including here. You recently met with the only American among the 1,500 or so people in the camp, I think. Hoda Muthana is her name. She's 24 years old. She left Alabama in the US to join ISIS 4 years ago. She now regrets that decision. Let's hear from her.
I don't know. I thought I was doing things correctly for the sake of God. And when I came here and I saw everything with my own eyes, I realized that I made a big mistake. And I know I ruined my future and my son's future, and I'm deeply, deeply regretting.
That's Hoda Muthana. She's now stranded in Syria with her son. What's likely to happen to her, Martin, is what's America saying?
Mike Pompeo, the U.S. Secretary of State, says she is not able to travel back to the U.S. He's left open the reason why, but it does appear that there is a question mark over her citizenship. And now whether that's because of her Yemeni parents who were born outside of the U.S. as opposed to her, she was born in New Jersey and moved to Alabama, or because the U.S. have indeed stripped her of citizenship is a question that's being tested in the Supreme Court at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll have some answers on that in the next fortnight or so.
And it's going to be a question tested here. It's going to be a question tested in Britain. It's going to be a question tested in many places. And the predisposition, I think, of governments and many is to say, well, don't bring them, let them come back. They're just trouble. But I suppose they're going to remain trouble, and their children, many of whom haven't been educated, if they're just floating around the world, are going to get radicalized. I mean, that's the fear, isn't it? Are we better off bringing them to our justice systems?
Well, I think the discussion needs to start with the protection obligations towards these children that have been born to whether they be Australian citizens, Brits or Europeans that have been born in the so-called caliphate. These children are some of the most vulnerable people on the planet. And if they're stranded in effectively a no-man's land with their father having died, with their mother being an outcast, and the only support available to them is people within this camp who can offer this message of radicalization, then you know, that's not going to solve a problem. That probably is going to enhance one. That said, in Europe and elsewhere, Australia too, there isn't yet an appetite for a discussion about what to do with women who made their own choices to go there, who disavowed their citizenship, who said that they belonged in this caliphate, and people like Hoda, who now does regret, genuinely regret the situation that she finds herself in. She was one of ISIS's most provocative online agitators for several years. And it's very hard for her to walk that back now, saying that, you know, I regret it and I've ruined things and I've finally woken up.
Yeah. Just finally, there have been, this is pretty grisly, I warn people, there have been reports of the discovery of a mass grave containing the bodies of dozens of people believed to be Yazidis who were enslaved by ISIS some years ago now. I can't even remember how many years ago that was, Martin. And what can you tell us about this?
Yeah, the Yazidis were taken in August 2014 from a village called Sinjar in northern Iraq, and they had been, as you say, enslaved and taken right across the caliphate, or so-called caliphate, by ISIS, and particularly handed out to some of their senior leaders. And there are indeed reports that there have been some beheaded remains of some of the Yazidis in and around Barghouz, which seemed to be a last redoubt for them. They were dragged through this retreat as well, and those reports are being treated as credible. So yet again, another damning indictment on the organization, and just a really poor reflection on what it claims to be a humane approach to Islam and to society. It's clearly nothing like that.
Yeah, brutal. Martin, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Martin Shulov is The Guardian's Middle East correspondent, joining us this morning from Beirut.